Blog Talk Radio.
Hello?
Martin Luther King, we had a conversation a couple days ago about handouts and how these right-wing these Republican memes have infiltrated the Democratic debate to suggest that, you know, ending welfare as we know it to, you know, all those kind of things are somehow, you know, great and noble things when we're not dealing with the underlying problem, which is that there's no economic opportunity there because of insane trade policies and because of Reaganomics. And Martin Luther King spoke to this. Jim and Shane, this is clip number four. Martin Luther King spoke to this sometime back, back in the early 60s. And I thought this was a really interesting quote. Here he is.
At the very same time that America refused to give the Negro any land, through an act of Congress, our government was giving away millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest, which meant that it was willing to undergird its white peasants from Europe with an economic floor. But not only did they give the land, they built land-grant colleges with government money to teach them how to farm. Not only that, they provided county agents to further their expertise in farming. Not only that, they provided low interest rates in order that they could mechanize their farms. Not only that, today many of these people are receiving millions of dollars in federal subsidies not to farm, and they are the very people telling the black man that he ought to lift himself by his own bootstraps. Now, this is what we are faced with, and this is the reality. Now, when we come to Washington in this campaign, we are coming to get our check.
From his speech, The Two Nations of Black America, and it's absolutely brilliant.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Nation Building Movement Presents Owned or Be Owned, Intro into a New Economic Paradigm. I am so excited to be back on the air. I am so excited to be speaking to old audience listeners and new audience listeners, but I'm more excited about the content of the topic that we have tonight. This is life-saving, life-giving information, and this is what we need in this day and time, and I have a very distinguished panel of guests, and I don't like to call people guests. I have a very distinguished panel of family that is going to share with us this new information on the new economic paradigm. And without further delay, of course, I would like to bring on my dear brother, my dear friend, and anybody who's ever listened to our show, you know who he is. You've heard him many times before. I would like to introduce Executive Director of Descendants of American Slaves for Economic and Social Justice, Brother Gene Gordon. Peace, brother. Are you there?
Yes. Good evening, Sister Queen. How are you?
I am blessed to be here, happy to be here in your presence, and I'm excited about all of the information that you have to share with us today. And I want to start off, if you don't mind, by you explaining to us what is DOS for ESJ.
Well, Doc3ESJ is a 501c3 non-for-profit educational organization and community-focused social action catalyst. We were formed here and headquartered here in St. Louis in 2019 to promote and educate all citizens on the fundamental principles of economic justice and social justice. And we encourage participatory systemic change based on the philosophy of economic personalism. We're dedicated to an equal opportunity, free enterprise growth model that targets the roots of racism, poverty, and fratricidal conflict that happens in our communities today and a violation of fundamental human rights.
Oh, wow. That's big. That's a lot of stuff. So tell me this. As we try to understand the economic policies that govern America today, can you better explain to us why did you feel it was necessary for this organization to be formed? What is so dysfunctional about our current economic system that you felt that this organization needed to be formed in order to create change in the lives of people in America?
Well, that's a good question. First, DOS3ESJ, what makes us different is that unlike any other organizations that we have within our community and all throughout communities of America, we have organizations with programs. Well, we are more than an organization with just a pragmatic approach to systemic challenges and social barriers that divide America today. DOS3ESJ, we're dedicated to working together with every person willing to change an unjust status quo. But the answer to your question is we can no longer continue to take problematic approaches to systemic problems. And most of America's problems today, if not all of America's problems today, is based around on economics. And what is happening within the social system, and those are social institutions that make up the social order of America, what is happening is they are attacking the problem of poverty at the same that they did almost 100 years ago after the Great Depression. They address the effects of poverty and don't look at the root cause. So DOS3ESJ, that's what makes us different, is because we're going out there and educating the community on economic and social systems. And the question is, how can you be liberated from a system when you don't understand it?
Absolutely. And I just want to know, when you say for all people, so this is African Americans, this is Caucasian Americans, this is Native Americans, this is immigrants, this is every race of people that you want to involve and have an impact on the current economic system. So how would you go about advising these people to actually understand that there is a need for change to the current economic system that we have? We have some people who are very comfortable. And what I mean is that they have been successful in life. They've been successful in business. How do we get them to see that this new economic system is beneficial for them, even though they consider themselves comfortable or are good in the system right now?
Well, one way of doing that is we have to be re-educated. We have to unlearn, to relearn. And slavery did not end in 1865. It just evolved.
Come
with
on.
Jim Crow laws, you know, the laws are no longer on the books, but today we have Jim Crow 2.0. So what we have to do, most of Americans, we're pretty much living in illusion, thinking that everything is okay. We're just living in a day of modern slave. We got wage slave systems. We got welfare slave systems. We got charity slave systems. And that's what I mean by, you know, slavery didn't, you know, end in 1865. It just evolved. And descendants of American slaves, what we're geared around is doing is bringing equal access ownership, not just to the descendants of American slaves, but the descendants of Native Americans, descendants of immigrants, and the descendants of American slave owners. We want everybody to have equal access to capital ownership. And the question is, why does the top 1% of the population owns almost 98% or 90% of all of the wealth in America? All of the capital and assets of America are owned by corporations, which are owned by people. A certain few who are getting concentrated wealth is there by the expense of the many. Well, that's what DOT-VESJ is all about. We're about educating the people on the current system, and we must, institutions that make up the social order must become institutions of change.
And, you know, when I think about descendants of American slaves, as I've, of course, been involved in this for years, off and on, and, you know, we know some of the same people, and we've had some of the same conversations. But as I hear you speak now, when you say descendants of American slaves, I always referred to the African Americans. But now, when you say you got to learn to relearn, I'm thinking about wage slaves, right? I'm thinking about people who are enslaved in the mind of thinking that there's going to be a resolution to our economic problem dealing with the same system. And when you do that and you still force yourself to try to operate and evolve under that system, you're almost like a slave, because the economic policies are the master, and the master is not necessarily treating you right. So it goes far beyond being a descendant of American slave in terms of slavery, but we have wage slaves and we have systematic slaves when it comes to our economic policies. And it just gives me a broader view on what DOS for ESJ is really, really all about. And Brother Gene, I understand that you got some people in your corner to help you with this, along with myself, of course. But you got some distinguished gentlemen with you today. So is there anybody you want to bring forward, introduce right now?
Yes. Before I introduce one of the greatest of all time, I just want to give you a quote of Frederick Douglass. He said, "I didn't know I was a slave until I found out I couldn't do the things that I wanted." So we teach the new paradigm of economic and social justice, and we'll go through that, and what is social justice, what is economic justice. We'll do that in later broadcasts. But what the best way to describe social justice is the civil rights movement and what Dr. King and the civil rights movement accomplished. It got us a voters' right bill and a public accommodation bill. But the Poor People's Campaign of that time, you know, is a model of social justice and mobilizing nonviolent people power to end the racist segregated law. Unfortunately, the Civil Rights Limit Campaign pretty much limited its economic demands to increase government-created jobs and welfare. So that's what most have been speaking. At 60 years later, jobs and welfare. But we'll go through that, you know, a little bit more in later broadcasts. But Let me just give you a number. Today, the richest 1% of Americans own more income-producing property than the bottom 90% of American people. Globally, 8 of the richest world citizens own more income-producing assets than over 3.5 billion world citizens. So that's alarming. And we talk about the racial wealth gap in America. Well, we've got a new paradigm and a solution to begin to close that racial wealth gap. And we'll get into that a little further. But I want to bring to the mic a guy that I am so blessed and fortunate to meet. He was a civil rights attorney in Mississippi. He headed up the war on poverty. This man has walked with some of the greatest, Medgar Evers, Fannie Lou Hamer, Stokely Carmichael, and many, many more. His name is Dr. Norman Curlin. He went to one of the best law schools here in America, University of Chicago, where he studied law and economics. Dr. Curlin, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
I'm delighted to be here. Good evening, Dr. Curlin. Well, thank you for joining us today.
Well, it's a great honor.
And you got something you want to share with us? Oh, thank you. Thank you. So tell us about how this new economic paradigm came to you, how you really kind of, I know you heard about it, and I know there's a great history behind it, and I'm not trying to tell it, but you're, to us, are like the father of this. So explain it to us in your own words. What does this mean to you?
At 92, I can tell you I've been working at this for a long time, not at the new paradigm. This was someone else's, and I had been working on ideas that dealt with the typical welfare programs where through the tax system, most people become, who are poor, have to depend on welfare checks. And this was the best that I had, but I felt I had no better idea. I started working on this in 1960 at the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare, and I was dealing mainly with welfare and education law. And in that, I saw, this was 1960 when I started there, and I saw that compromises were being made at the federal level to the segregationists in the country. And I worked there for 2 years, and I got so disgusted that I decided, well, I'm not going to stay there, and I went over to the Commission on Civil Rights, and as Gene mentioned, I spent a couple of years from 62 to 64, in Mississippi, and working with SNCC, and working with Medgar Evers was a friend. I would do whatever he asked me to do, and he was one of the most courageous people that I've ever met. In any event, I did have the economic solution at that time. But then in 1964, we had the anti-segregation laws. And as a result of that, however, at the same time, they developed the War on Poverty in 1964. And I had, as I said before, I had been involved with people dealing with poverty, but there was something in the language that made a lot of sense to me. and it said maximum feasible participation of the poor. So when I heard that, I said, no, I could see that made sense because of what I saw in Mississippi and Greenwood, where the citizens were organized, and I helped them to negotiate that we're supposed to all be arrested. I went in at the request of Bob Moses of SNCC. I went and talked to the mayor and chief of police, and I said that the people are organized. They're going to be coming peacefully. I'm here to report on what happens, and I hope that they can submit protest ballots. That's what they want to do. And so he decided, okay, they were going to arrest everybody. And so he allowed that to happen. And it was a great thing because I saw how the people in Greenwood would act. And so I knew, of course, what Martin Luther King, too. He understood to change the system, you needed organized, peaceful people power, organized to demand that the system be changed. And as a result of that, we had the end of segregation laws. So I went and I decided, well, let's see whether we can do something now with this program. And then that was 64, and 65, I was sent out to California to deal with some of the states there, California and Arizona, Nevada, and so on, where I could provide money to the government. And so I could provide money to poverty-impacted areas. So in several of the cities, I got more money to grassroots organizations than to the power structure. And then suddenly, those above me began to criticize that. So I decided I'm going to quit. I don't want to have anything more to do with the federal government, and was going to quit. And somebody came into my office on the day that I made that decision. And he introduced me to an idea that I had never heard of. Even though I had studied economics, nothing was like that of a man named Louis Kelso, who wrote a book about ownership, power to the people through equal ownership opportunity. And I read his books. He had written two books by then. I hadn't heard of them. They were written while I was in law school and never heard of them. But when I heard it, 15 minutes, I said, my God, why didn't I think of that? And since that time, I quit the government, went to work with the Citizens Crusade Against Poverty, which had all the leadership, all the civil rights leadership, and several of the more progressive unions, and it was funded mainly by the United Auto Workers, and the chairman of the group was Walter Reuther.
Well, hey, Norm, can I ask you sure, not to cut you off? It's just so much of your history, but you know, we want the audience to really know, you know, the things that you have accomplished since meeting Louis Kelso.
Okay. You were with Kelso.
With Kelso. You were one of the leading pioneers in writing
got the law. Working with Kelso, I was able to get the employee stock ownership plans, or ESOPs, so that workers could become owners in such a way that they don't even have to put up their own money, but there are now thousands of ESOP companies in this country, and I developed a project I've been through 30 different countries, but we had one in Egypt where we bought out a major company. And the workers became the major owners. So that was the first foreign country. But I've also been to Russia, and I had people
we just the ESOPs. You were one of the pioneers in writing up, getting the first ESOP.
Yes, I wrote
also
the laws.
You served on the President Reagan's task force.
That was later. That's right. We became known. President Reagan set up first I was asked by some of his top people to get a law that would fund a presidential task force for Project Economic Justice. And it was to do ESOPs in Central America and the Caribbean. Because we didn't ask for any money, because there was a very wealthy ambassador for the Latin American countries there, William Middendorf. He became the chair, and Reagan named me as the vice chairman of this. And we brought in both the unions, the AFL-CIO, and Teamsters were involved. But we also had the Chamber of Commerce, and so we developed the program, and President Reagan's a talk on that is on our website that people can listen to, a 60-minute show.
Dr. Kerman, let me ask you a question right quick. So tell me, in your opinion, why do you feel that the economic policies of today needs to be changed?
Well, you have to, because control over money determines who's going to be the owners. So what you have, as Gene pointed out, the numbers, the access to money to finance the growth of the economy is limited to those who have past savings or can manipulate the monetary system, so that all future growth will go to the same people and deprive most of the citizens to a fundamental human right. In other words, so back in 1948, when the UN was formed, they had the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and Article 17 said every person must have the right to own personally or in association with others all property. And then the second sentence, but you don't do it by taking the property of those who own. They can't take it with them after they die. You can change the inheritance laws and the gift tax laws to encourage them to spread it out, or it'll be heavily taxed. And so we had all of that is in a UN's declaration at the formation. The only countries that didn't support that, the UN in that language, was Russia and China at that time, before 1948, December of 48. So no country in the world has added a system which would democratize future ownership. And the way you do it is through a new money and tax system. And so we designed a new money and tax system called the Economic Democracy Act. Owner be owned is the slogan. So that's why I'm very happy that Gene is the first organization. I like seeing it coming from DAS, because I think that's very, very important for America, which made people into property, or they're treating them as things, not people, that they could own and control and receive the fruits of those that are producing new things for the market. It's very important for them to become they, and I want to see the descendants of Native Americans, but as Gene says, not, or even descendants of slave owners, even the racists, because my goal, and it always has been, is are three things. You got to deal with poverty in a systematic way that will hurt no one. You want to deal with racism, and you want to deal with war. Because the First Nation, now if DAS can make America into the first nation in the world that will adopt the Economic Democracy Act, which we wrote, then citizens all over the world will demand that.
Okay, no.
And if they demand it, there'll be no war. Because people who have power don't want war.
Okay.
Thank you, Dr. Carolyn.
Your time is up. Next person I want to introduce is Enrico Space on the line.
He's having some difficulty. I asked him to call back in, so he hasn't called back in as of yet.
Okay. We also have Myron Wilkinson out of Louisville, Kentucky. Myron is going to be sharing with us today Silicon Cafe. And it's dealing with technology, and you know that's something that we have to really, really, you know, dive deep into is productive land and technology. In the beginning, you guys heard Martin Luther King in his speech about that was geared around the Homestead Act of 1862, which Abe Lincoln gave over 10%. Of America's land, keeping in mind it was stolen land. He gave over 10% of America's land to white settlers, freed slaves, and immigrants who wanted to become citizens of America to go west of the Mississippi and start the agriculture revolution. That was in the land frontier. It's never been done in the history of America other than that time in 1862. That was through the land frontier. Well, there's a new frontier that is infinite, and nobody, especially in the DAS, Descendants of American Slaves community, nobody is paying attention to and talking about the new frontier, which is advanced technology, which is replacing human labor, it's replacing jobs, and you go in Walmart today, you got more self-checkouts than you have cashiers. You go in Applebee's to have a lunch or dinner, you're placing your order on a kiosk machine. You go in local grocery stores where companies used to come in and take inventory, you have a robot going up and down the aisle now counting inventory on a daily basis. It's called a tally. So scientists is at a thrust today to replace human labor, and that's going to happen. It's the reason is going to happen is not because of this greed and capitalism. God did not intend for you to be a labor slave all your life. So there's a new frontier that's taking place, and we as citizens of America have to tap into it. We talk about closing the racial wealth gap. Well, within the Dodge community, I believe in entrepreneurship. I believe in supporting black business. Well, most of the black businesses are geared around consumer goods and services. We as a people have to get into the producer of goods and services. And that's the new advanced technology. So I want to introduce to you Myron Wilkins from Louisville, Kentucky. How are you, Myron? Are you there?
Doing well. Blessed to be here this evening with you all. Hello and good evening. My name is Myron Wilkerson of Louisville, Kentucky. I'm an educator and technology provider. My current background and concentration is 3D printing and robotics. To give you a little background pertaining to Silicon Cafe, Silicon Cafe itself is a conceptual hybrid learning lab. Our initial concentration and focus was facilitating educational protocols outside of the traditional classroom setting by extracting educators and teachers from public and private educational institutions. As we continue our path of transformative education, we obtained a brick-and-mortar location to become a technology provider and place our technological footprint across the world, as we are now authorized and certified resellers of the world's largest IT ecosystem, TD SYNNEX and Ingram Micro. Silicon Cafe is positioning ourselves to be a channel leading to the design to distribution process and also enabling the business and services sectors. We embrace community engagement and education by combating the digital divide and creating equitable and equal technology access to all. We currently offer telecommunication solutions as an authorized Verizon B2B, Gen Mobile, and also Boost Mobile authorized retailers pertaining to telecommunications in our current demographic. Silicon Cafe is seeking to build an educational learning lab to enable the platform of articulation in St. Louis, Missouri, and organizations like Descendants of American Slaves and The Remix, who are currently setting the tone and putting in the work on the ground. Thus, we'll enable our community to have access to technology, information, and transformative education as we are seeking to build a polytechnic network to integrate with subject matter and accredited curriculum for the children and citizens of St. Louis, Missouri.
Okay, well, Molly, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to ask him a question. So, you said a lot, and
understood.
I just want people to know why did you feel a need to create an entity like Silicon Cafe, and how do you see in the future that impacting the educational curriculum that is offered to mostly our inner city youth who do not necessarily have access to internet interactions as some of the more affluent neighborhoods in the suburbs, because I've seen in inner cities to whereas they may have computer labs versus some schools in the suburbs, their whole entire curriculum is done on the computer. And so I see that a lot of children are being left behind technically. And so how will Silicon Cafe impact the curriculum that is being offered to our inner city youth today?
Those are great questions. For the most part, Silicon Cafe was established and built with a concept as we continue to create emphasis on. So with that being said, we embrace what's current as far as the lesson plans and curriculum and really creating an emphasis on the displacement of the American workforce due to automation, Internet of Things, 5G technologies, and Internet of bodies, which is wearable technology such as Apple Watches and things of that nature. Through this transformative process, we're currently seeing the displacement of our educational infrastructures all across America right now, especially in economically deprived communities, primarily our inner cities that also displaced through comprehensive city plans and other aggressive tools that institutions of the government utilize to gentrify and transition communities for the greater good of the government and opposed for the people. So Silicon Cafe currently embraces the access of underutilized facilities, like as far as old churches, old buildings that are not being utilized in particular demographics, to give the physical access and also to accommodate the underutilized demographics by providing technology within these particular realms, meaning if there are cluster groups of people that facilitate educational components of any subject matter, Silicon Cafe comes to the assistance and help with the assistance of providing the technology infrastructure, whether it be computers or certified or accredited IT curriculum. We primarily utilize Pearson VUE testing centers, Pearson View allows us to be proctored IT testing hubs, which enables individuals to come into a particular physical space and take accredited educational protocols such as your GED to then go on to an IT certification or professional licensure. So for the most part, we're very diverse, very open-minded and creative because we only exist with good energy based upon stimulating people power and opposed to stimulating capital. We only began working within the consumer electronics realm just to generate revenue because of a lot of the technologies in which we were teaching and educating with. We also wanted to make readily available to the communities in which we serve. So therefore, we're working on building out the infrastructure and logistics to accommodate different commerce components. But our main focus is really educating the community and providing the technology solutions that make it easy for us all. So our main thing as we continue to create emphasis is educating transformative technologies and making sure that things make sense across the board, whether they be generational gaps due to age, technology gaps due to knowledge, or just information due to the ignorance of us all, because there's always space for us always to grow within our different industries.
Oh, that is awesome. All right, Brother James.
Yes, I want to ask Iris, how do we feel about and how express why is it so important that our community and the youth get into technology? You know, most of our youth, they utilize technology for, you know, social media, and things like that. They spend a lot of time using technology that way. Why is it important that they begin to use technology as an educational component to pretty much, you know, because you can go on YouTube and all that and pretty much learn anything that you want. I mean, but how can we transition our youth to using technology to advance their minds, whatever career they have, you know, and get them to begin using technology from an educational standpoint?
The thing is, the children already know how to use and utilize the technology. They're just not engaging with the technology in a transformative manner. So if they do not learn how to use the technology, they will be controlled by the technology and the lack thereof. And reason being, you either learn how to build the robots or be displaced by the robots. As we continue to have the conversation pertaining to automation in our everyday lives, we're seeing technology be integrated in a manner to where the displacement is more than obvious. And it's also coming in a time to where our institutions of technology and our institutions of education have to be recreated. The systems have to be broken down so that way systematic oppression is not just extracted, but discussed, explained, and eliminated through implementation of new innovative technologies. The true meaning of technology is creating different ways for us to work together with things that we already have and making them better. So we're just evolving as people and adapting to one another's environment to make sure that we can accommodate one another, as we're really in times where the financial tools known as money have very little subject matter, and there's more concentration on the embracement of one another because we know that we're going to need money, in other words, to get different things done. But to answer your question, for the most part, is education, education, education. Because, again, we're well into the 21st century. New technologies pertaining to automotive industries, aviation, engineering applications, regardless of what industry you're in, are controlled by technology. So instead of our children playing Fortnite, we need to teach them how to build games like Fortnite so that way they can reinforce ownership and collectively educate one another to embrace the possibility of becoming owners and creators of community-owned technologies in opposed to our traditional institutions that always own things.
Yeah. You mentioned something. You talked about you've got a 3D printer, and I was never familiar with a 3D printer. Now you're talking about how the youth can not only, you know, entertained by technology, but now you went into the producer of goods and services. and you introduced to me a 3D printer. Explain to the audience what is exactly a 3D printer and what are some of the things that a 3D printer can pretty much produce. And then I'm going to jump back to Norm Curl, and I got a question I want to ask him. But tell us a little about 3D printers and how that can really, really be beneficial to the youth and the young to learn about.
Understood. 3D printers are currently utilized in different industries and various industries. 3D printers are currently used in everything that is built and fabricated, from homes to vehicles. 3D printing subjectively is similar to injection molding, basically a modern CNC routing machine, where you take a digital file and produce a physical object. Rolls-Royce Motor Car Company spent $700 million at their West Lafayette Purdue University to build a polymer facility to where you take old recyclable plastics such as credit cards and medicine bottles to build vehicles such as the 100EX and the $600,000 Rolls-Royce Ghost. There are a lot of different applications such as 3D printing that can be taught. It just depends upon your potential end user. As you're starting to see, homes are being constructed out of 3D printers. There's very few components of a 3D printing system. It's just understanding the components, mechanics, and circuitry of the particular device itself. A 3D printer basically is a device that allows you to, as I repetitively say, build a physical object with an extrusion material. An extrusion material can be anything that you use to build your end product. So typical 3D printers utilize plastic for prototyping, which is PLA and ABS, which will be a continued conversation. So for the most part, 3D printers themselves are the new way of additive manufacturing, and also can displace our lack of importing regulations, such as our current crisis with semiconductors. You can take polycrystalline, which is the exact same material that you see in your solar calculators, 3D print wafers and make semiconductors to combat current issues relative similar to what our semiconductor automotive problem would be. These aren't theories. This is simply how they're produced. But due to trade regulations and our current implementations in public policy through institutions, we as Americans are not enabled in an innovative manner to where we can displace our lack of generating revenues within creating new technologies. So we can create the products if we're allowed to and put in the position to. So we now have the opportunity to collectively, especially within St. Louis, as we find a vehicle that we can collectively educate and use as a vehicle to create a community-owned technology, such as a 3D printing machine or something relatively close that can be owned by many instead of few.
Wow. Okay. You're saying that, you know, you can not only educate the youth on 3D printing, but they can actually become producers of, you know, take their product out to the free market.
That is correct. You no longer have the need to reach out to outsource for prototyping. A child that can merely draw can actually draw an image, take a picture with his iPhone, transition that image to what is known as an STL file that creates the 3D printed object and create a tangible prototype for developmental purposes for research and development, and opposed to having to accumulate $500,000 or $600,000 crowdfunding and our typical sources of traditional fundraising tools. It enables a child to utilize their creativity just by having the accessibility and making the best of them being idea-based learners, as we want our children to be globally competent and opposed to staying within the restricted realms of mentality in which they're used to thus far.
Wow. Okay, Queen, you have any more questions for...
Yes, I want to ask you, because you talked about basically industries, right? And so
yes, ma'am.
With this technology education, let's just say you have a child that is very creative, you know, very artistic, and they have just the natural given gift to be creative and innovative in whether it's art, whether it's vehicles, whether it's just any kind of instrument that can be used, whether it's in hospitals, schools, business, or whatever, and say that the child may not have necessarily the credentials from a university, is it a plan in the future where this technology training will actually be certifiable, where youth can actually come out of high school and be, you know, use their own natural creativity to create businesses for themselves? Do you see that in the future? Because we need our children to be aware of technology, and we need them to use their creative abilities to create businesses and change industries for themselves.
I don't see it in the future. I see it as now, because the Lord makes room for your gift. Silicon Cafe is merely just a small IT company that is growing into what it is already manifesting itself to be. So with that being said, Silicon Cafe will be a complete polytechnic K-12 institution that enables children with educational curriculum that is accredited. We're working on setting up the infrastructure to where we can extract educators, children, and families from their current educational infrastructure and place them within a system that works for community level, regardless if the child comes from public, private, or a homeschooled environment. So to really answer your question and create a lot of emphasis on it, we are completely working on people knowing more about Silicon Cafe, who I am as an individual. As an individual, for the most part, I guess I would consider myself an introvert, but I guess, again, God is pulling me from my normal comfort zone, putting me in a place to where he sees fit. So at this point in time, I'm working on people knowing more about me as a person and how Silicon Cafe can work within the things that people are already collectively doing. Instead of me reinventing the wheel, I just want to reinforce help. And when it comes to technological help, we want to grab these children in a place to where they can use their creativity. Right now, you do not even have the need for embryonic stem cell research extraction or embryos, because you can use a body. So there's a lot of applications within different industries that 3D printers can be used in, regardless of a child's interest or concentration or an educator. So what 3D printing does, and as technology will do for us all, will enable the creative minds of us all as parents, educators, and children to develop the products for us to be, to live in a more sustainable society.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, I'm looking forward to see the development of that across the country, because we have so many children that are suffering. Because everybody is not designed to go to college or anything like that. But I think everybody has their own creative ability. Everybody has a desire to be something, you know, in the future as they're growing and starting to decide the direction that they want to take for their lives. And they have so little opportunity. I think this would be a good opportunity for those students who have had difficulties, that have had run-ins with the law. I think once they have their own creative space, that it will allow them to be successful. So thank you, brother, for what you're doing in the community with technology. And Gene, we have Brother Andrico on. I hope he can stay on. I know he's having some technical difficulty, but I just want you to know he's here.
Andrico Space, how are you today, sir?
I'm doing fine. Hopefully you can hear me.
Yes. Glad to have you on. Andrico, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do, the importance of your line of service?
Yeah, no problem. So thanks for having me. So Andrico Spates. Oh, can you guys still hear me?
Yes, sir, we can.
Hopefully you can still hear me. Apologize. Yes.
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. Sorry about that.
No problem.
Yes, so Andrico Spates. I spent about 20 years in the information technology industry. Really started off, helping students and individuals learn and understand technology. you know, I have both a master's degree in technology as well as a master's in business. And currently what I do now is to help small business owners as well as students not just understand technology, but also leverage it and utilize it in ways that can progress them towards their goal, whether that goal be entrepreneurship, whether that goal be advancements in their career, whatever the case may be. It's how do you leverage technology in a way that helps you continue to be productive and continue to make progress, you know, toward your ultimate outcome.
Okay. So we have someone else in technology that is also offering an opportunity for education in that field. And Andrika, I just want to ask you, how do you feel your services can be utilized with DOS for ESG? And what do you, you know, what is the plan for the future? Because you and Myron are kind of like in the same field, but I know this, the two of you do different things, but I hear education through both of you. So in the future, how do you see yourself growing with DOS for ESG as far as the new economic paradigm? What would be the benefit of technology in that, you know, in that realm of what we're doing with DOS for ESG and technology?
Yeah, well, I think one of the first things is really about how do you share and expand the audience in regards to the knowledge that's required, right, in order to make the action actually happen. And that's one of the great things about the Internet, right? The Internet is really about getting access to and exchanging knowledge. And if anything has really given us a very close look at that, that has been the pandemic, right, and everything that happened there and how that kind of forced a change in how everyone had to consume information, right? It kind of forced people to go online, right? A lot of places weren't ready, and they were kind of thrown into that. And so the results coming from that were, I would say, a little bit, you know, kind of all over the place, if you will, right? There's some great results. There's some that weren't so good. So if you look at trying to shift a mindset, or you look at trying to, you know, expose individuals to something that's new, right, to relearn, you have to look at how individuals are learning and what are those mechanisms and vehicles that are offered to do that. And technology is the thing that does that, right? So I'm a firm believer in something called hybrid learning, right, where there's a component of it that's online and a component of it that's in person, right? Now, in the case of what happened with the pandemic, right, that's kind of, we went straight to online. It was, you know, we couldn't be in person, right? And I think it's proven that people need a little bit of, you know, physical interaction, right, with one another. But with the hybrid model, you do have that. You have kind of the best of both worlds. Those who love to learn online can utilize that. Those who love to learn in person can utilize that as well. So I think that the overall thing is taking the messaging and making sure the messaging can be delivered in a way that you can reach the audience and get the audience to be able to action and to be, you know, comfortable and knowledgeable about what we're talking about here.
Okay. Thank you for that. And Gene? Gene?
Yes, I'm on.
Oh, okay. Okay. I didn't know if you had any questions for Andrico.
No, Andrico, if you want to expound to us the, if you may, you know, in a letter time, the two programs that you're offering to high school students such as juniors, I think the program is over for this year. But I'm hoping that it'll kick back up next summer, or two programs that your company, Cisco, is offering to the community organization and high school, junior and senior students.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think the overall, I guess, point to make is that there's, you know, to get young people exposed to technology and to understand what's, you know, available, both from being able to just, you know, have a career in technology, but also to be an entrepreneur, right, in the technology space, you have to look at those vehicles, right? And one of those vehicles, if you is through internships and externships. Now, different people look at them in different ways, but you know, the way we look at it is an externship is available to those that are in high school, right? So you can get a chance to get exposed to what it's like to work in the technology industry right in high school and kind of get immersed in that. And so you can spend, you know, a couple of weeks learning all there is to know about kind of how the whole technology company works, right? So you get exposure and access to, you know, high-level executives. You get exposure to the various aspects of technology and how they apply, right? So whether it be something like security, whether it be the Internet of Things, whether it's collaboration and hybrid work, you can get an understanding of how that actually applies, you know, and what difference that can make. So it's not just about learning the technology, the ins and outs, right, the ones and zeros of technology, right? It's about learning what do these things actually do and what's the difference that they can make. And then you also get the chance to work together, right? So you work together on a project that takes that information and applies it in a very unique way. So then that's kind of the teamwork and collaboration piece, right? So the way we view that is in the term of externships. Now, the other side of it is internships, right? And, you know, we can go into, you know, the differences, you know, at a later point in time, but that kind of builds upon that, right? So now you get a chance to actually be, you know, in the company, right, working on very specific things that are along the lines of what you care about. So if you have an interest in learning about transit, so the transportation area, you can get an internship working specifically in the transportation space, right? Or if you're interested mm-hmm. in how technology works in professional sports, right, you can get an internship directly into that. And they kind of build upon one another. The last thing that I'll say about what we have and what we offer, it goes back to that education piece. So there's, you know, a ton of different places that offer technology training, right? And you can pretty much take your pick. But what I want to focus on is the ways that you can get access to that, you know, very easily, right? Now, we still have to discuss the digital divide, you know, and issues with access to technology and the internet. That's a whole nother discussion, okay? But you know, there are, you know, platforms, so I'll give you an example, what's called Skills for All, and well, we can talk about this in detail at a later point in time as well, where you can go online. I heard the question kind of when I came in about getting, you know, certified with the technology, where you mm-hmm. can go on online in a self-paced format and get like a cybersecurity curriculum, learn it from front to back, and get a certification in cybersecurity. It's free of charge. All you need is a device and an internet connection. So when you combine these things together, right, that knowledge, that certification, along with access to the experience through an externship and internship, that really kind of sets you in the right path when it comes to learning, understanding, and applying technology for yourself.
Oh, wow, that's interesting. And I like the alternative to traditional education. I don't knock college, you know, because I went to college, but there are a lot of students, a lot of people who will never have that college, university experience. And I'm just, you know, elated that, you know, there's so much opportunity in the technology world because it's needed now. But right now, just for a moment, I want to go to Brother Gene, because Gene, I want you, because Norman mentioned it, but I had planned to ask you this question early on, but I want you, if you don't mind, to expound a little bit more on the Economic Democracy Act, because I want people to understand that this is our introduction show But this is a new series for Nation Building Movement. And this is Nation Building Movement, and the series is called Let's Move. So for the next year or so, we're going to be talking about this. We're going to be talking about Dr. ESJ, and Dr. ESJ is such a large organization in itself. And we're still in the developmental stages, so there's plenty opportunity for people to join on with us, to contact us, to give us your level of interest. And Brother Gene is going to talk about that some more. But I really want you to just expound on the Economic Democracy Act, because I think that is key for people to understand what we're doing, why we're doing it. And as we go on with these broadcasts, you're going to get more and more information. But this is just an introductory to what we're doing right now. And Brother Gene, if you don't mind, a few minutes on that.
Yeah, the Economic Democracy Act, and I'm going to the beginning of the show, you heard Dr. King describe the Homestead Act of 1862. Well, the Economic Democracy Act is formerly known as the Capital Homestead Act. And the Homestead Act of 1862, all the land, the stolen land, was given away. That was in the land frontier, as I mentioned earlier. There's pretty much America, only land that they pretty much own now is pretty conservation land, you know, national parks and the arch grounds and things like that. So it was, the Economic Democracy Act was called the Capital Homestead Act. What is capital? Capital can be, we'll go into that a little further, but just to give you a little glimpse of what we'll be talking about in the future, capital can, it's not just, you know, upfront money to start a business, which most of us think it is. Capital can be producing land, it can be robotics, it can be a patent, it can be, you know, a brand such as Jordan, Nike. It can be anything that, it can be, like I say, a patent, or anything that produces an income. So the Economic Democracy Act, and I'll let Norm talk about it a little bit more in depth once I cover a legislation and a component and a vehicle that will lead to the Economic Democracy Act that we just got passed into and signed into law here in Missouri. But the Economic Democracy Act is giving, will give each individual equal access opportunity to own capital. Now, we got to ask ourselves, what is, you know, you hear a lot about political democracy. Well, you will never have a political democracy until you have economic democracy. Political power is to make and interpret the laws. Political democracy is and equal access to participate in the process, and they gave us that through the ballot box and the vote. Well, what is economic democracy? They did not give us equal access to economic democracy. So we're going to we're trying to get Congress to enact the Economic Democracy Act. If you look at the economic system of America, they're in trouble. And those up in Washington, they don't know what to do. They don't, you know, they're playing child games up there with your lives. So the Economic Democracy Act gives each and every man, woman, and child an opportunity to participate in the economic process. And this is what we consider is you have to find new ways, non-inflationary growth of the economy. You cannot continue to print money out of thin air that's not backed up by any production or any access, and that's what America's, the Federal Reserve is doing. They're printing money that's not backed by anything, and that's why we have inflation. But the Economic Democracy Act will give each man, woman, and child an opportunity to participate in the economic program. But first we have to change the monetary policies. And we have to understand, and it can be done under existing law. Section 13(2)(a) of the Federal Reserve Act says the Federal Reserve has the powers to create money for economic growth. And the main part about that at the end, it says by bills of exchange. What does bills of exchange mean? That means that it's a promissory to be paid off future savings. It should not, it's not based on past savings. And that's what, you know, most of the economists today, the conventional thinkers, they're basing everything on past savings. But by bills of exchange, it can be paid off by future profits and future savings. So what the Federal Reserve is doing is printing money for government that's backed up by government debt. I would like all the listening audience, when you get a chance, go and Google usdebtclock.org. That's usdebtclock.org. usdebtclock.org. America today has a national debt of $30 trillion. Total debt, including Social Security and Medicare, is $100 trillion. But you never hear anybody talking about how they're going to reduce the national debt and the total debt and have a deficit of $2.3 trillion. So what the Federal Reserve is doing and what government is doing, the Federal Reserve is printing money out of thin air that is, what it's doing is basing it on future taxes that will be paid by your children's 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 children. So what they're doing is they're financing your children's future at this point now. But the Economic Democracy Act, there's tax laws involved, and I let Norm go in depth to that for about 2 minutes. But a component of the Economic Democracy Act is the Citizen Land Development Co-op. And we just had the Citizen Land Development Co-op Senate House Bill 2400 slash Bill 772. The concept of the Citizen Land Development Cooperative is a part of the proposed national plan called the Economic Democracy Act. And it was introduced by Senator Carl LaMay along with myself, and it was introduced and signed into law by Missouri Governor Mike Parson. And according to this, what happens with the Citizen Land Development Co-op, and we'll talk about it more in the future, but it'll give each citizen an equal voting share of development within their community. This is a way that we can build underserved and rural areas, communities with development, and the citizens have an equal voting share, meaning they own the land and the new advanced technology. And what we're trying to do is attract new corporations, mostly new advanced corporations, back into the urban city, and the land leases, the citizens will get dividends through the land leases of that development and the land. So, and this is a way to, it won't cost taxpayers anything. It is not a land trust, you know, and that's what makes the Citizen Land Development Co-op different from typical community land trusts and similar nonprofit community development vehicle, is that it's a for-profit, professionally managed enterprise providing each citizen with an equal voting, full dividend payout, non-transferable share. The CLC would generate income from land uses, leases for local permanent residents, and give them formal vote in community planning. And that's what we just had passed here in the state of Missouri, the heart of America. And our project, you can go to our website, docs4esj.org, and just click on the link programs and go to the Citizen Land Development Co-op. There's a structure on the website on how it operates and how the structure of it, the step-by-step. But this is a beginning to end poverty and conflict and crime with our community. And
could I put numbers on that, Gene?
Huh?
Could I add the numbers so that people can understand that this is real and point out that in recent years, new capital formation has been about $4 trillion. We divided that by the population, and it came to about 12, that is at present rates of growth, that is new capital formation, new technologies to be added to the productive sector. It comes down to, we used the number 10,000, assuming that per year, that by the time a child born today would reach the age of 18, they would have 18,190,000 of income, and that would be based on assets that that child would have of about 190,000. Now, when that child reached age, if we grew at that same rate, by the time that child reached the age of 65 and would be eligible for Social Security, they would be receiving $88,690,000 in income, and they would have a $660,000 capital estate. Now, I get, my wife and I are both on Social Security. That's about $12,000 a year. Okay? So this shows you something much bigger, that you won't even need Social Security. And most of the welfare checks that have to be written today to keep people alive will probably not be needed. People will be able to be owners of that new technology that was described earlier today. That's important. And also, I think kids who today are fed up with the system and will suddenly realize how important it is if they could be owners of that which is going to be in the future, that they see the value of education. Education is not teaching them these things. The economics education is not teaching ownership. They're teaching that you get jobs. As a matter of fact, the term for was productivity, but it described labor productivity, not capital productivity. And the important thing is to be able to have the funds, and that's a social good. Just as the ballot is the way to empower people for the political system, but for an everyday, as far as everyday life is, money is the key. But we have to think about money and make sure that it's not counterfeit money, just creating money with nothing behind it. And that's what the federal government is doing now. The Economic Democracy Act will get, and you had Hubert Humphrey, you had McGovern. After I talked with them, they were supportive. The Joint Economic Committee of Congress back in 1977, they called for broad-based ownership, and they don't anymore. But there are people.
You Center for Economic CESJ, you can also go to their website. Norm, you guys have introduced, we're going to go in depth in further discussions, but tell the audience a little bit about Justice University and just the number three components or what's discussed in the Justice University? Just tell us a little bit about Justice University. We'll get into the curriculum part a little further in discussions, but tell the audience a little bit about Justice
University. Because I can tell you because there are the most important things I want to just describe and define terms that are key, but they're not taught well. So when I entered, for example, what is property? What is property? You see, and most people, as I did before I entered law school, I always thought of property as things. Of course, slaves were treated as property. But you have to understand, what is property? And one thing it is control over things, just as the owners control people. and we got rid of that. But it's control. And the second thing about it, very simple. It's the fruits. It's the right to the fruits of what you own. And if you own it together with somebody else, then it's the share in those fruits. That's what we're talking about. And then, what is money? And I just want to describe the, again, this was not my definition. This was Kelso's definition. But I think unless everybody in DAS understand this and listen to this, money is not a part of the visible sector of the economy. People do not consume money. Money is not a physical factor of production, but rather a yardstick for measuring economic input, economic outtake, and the relative values of the real goods and services of the economic world. I can say more, but let me say, Kelso did not say what that yardstick should be. Should it be gold?
Norm, should it be silver? Norm, you're saying that money is not, as just as we all know it, money is just not fiat currency, which fiat in Latin means let
That's
it
right.
So it's money
That's
is
right.
a yardstick in measuring value, and you're saying that property, most of us think that property is the thing that we own. But property
no.
Okay, but property actually is what the thing produces and the powers over what it produces. So I want the listening audience to know that the house we live in, you know, that we have to understand the meaning of private property and what is money. But power follows property, and
that's right.
We got to get economic power to the people. Let's stop just screaming power to the people. We've got to get economic power to the people. That's why today, you know, understanding government is supposed to be of the people, for the people, and by the people. Well, today, government is of corporations, for corporations, and bought by corporations because the corporation has all the power. And what we're trying to do under the Economic Democracy Act is we need broad-based ownership, and which would without taking anything from those who own it or who already have it. See, one thing that we have to do within the DAS community is that we've got to get the word redistribution out of our language. Redistribution is taken from those who have it to give to those who need. Well, they've been doing that. So that's what they've been doing for the last hundreds or so years. But one thing I want to point out, and how do we accomplish this? Martin Luther King, when he went to Lyndon Johnson after accomplishing the public accommodation bill, But Dr. Martin Luther King said after we were able to sit at the counter with white people, Dr. Martin Luther King decided, well, he said, well, what good is it to sit at the counter with white people when you can't even order from the same menu because you don't have the money, you know, to order from the menu. So he went for the voters' rights bill, and he told Lyndon Johnson, we want a voter rights bill. And you know what Lyndon Johnson looked at Martin Luther King and said? Make me do it. But Martin Luther King understood that subtle language that Lyndon Johnson was talking about. So Martin Luther King understood that he must go and build the people power to get the voters' rights bill, and that's what he did, and that's what we've got to do. You know, I remember when Obama left office and he was asked the question, why didn't he do anything for the black community? And his response was because the black community didn't demand of anything. Well, right. It's time for us to stop marching and protesting. It's time for us to make some demands. And Biden said in his acceptance speech when he was elected, he said he owed the descendants of American slaves community for their voter turnout and getting Trump out of office. He said he owed it to the African-American community. But look what we do, and this is something we have to stop doing. We have to stop giving them the vote and then going around, go back and sit on our ass and let them run this thing downhill. What American government is doing to try to, they're trying to balance this thing, and it's not working. It's like pouring water uphill. That's what's happening. But I think we've got a solution or beginning. You know, when we talk about, you know, we're crying about reparations, and what DOS BESJ is doing, and the word reparation is the root word repair. This is the first step in repairing. First, you have to repair the system. You have to repair the system, and we're taking the first step in trying to repair an undemocratic system.
Right. Now, there's one other point. There's a Lord Acton said way back in the 1800s, he said power tends to corrupt, and
yeah.
Absolute power corrupts absolutely. And this is important because unless you have the power of money, those who control it are not going to be generous. They're not going to let you in the door. They'll control the money, or they'll pay off the people who are creating the money, like the central bank. You see, and if we want to empower the people, then we got to get money power to the people, real money, asset-backed money, money that will create new goods and services for Americans and the world, and other countries will want to do the same thing. That's what we should be thinking about.
Norm, can you tell us a little bit more about, I know I expounded on a little bit, but you were the designer and architect of the Citizen Land Development Co-op, linking people
right.
to Lincoln technology. Can you
right.
tell us a little bit about that and this accomplishment that CESJ, along with its partnership with DOS for ESJ, myself, how important that is? And can you just
this is the Citizens Land Development Co-op.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. It's important mainly because you were able to get a Republican governor to sign it and to make it into law, and that made it the first law in the world in history in which every child, woman, and man would own the land instead of the government owning the land. In their cities, in the state. So this is big, but the one thing you lack is where's the money going to come from? Now, it could come from the Federal Reserve because they have the power to create money that will be asset-backed out of the future savings. So it isn't free, but nobody has to pay for it in advance. It's only out of the profits that are paid out, the dividends that would be paid out on the new stock that's issued by corporations, and then people would have power. There'd be equality of power. Everyone would have the same right. The poorest person in the country, and of course children, as well as the wealthiest. So you're not leaving them out. They're citizens, but you have to have a set of tax laws also, and gift tax and inheritance laws, which we've designed in the Economic Democracy Act. So you have to read that, and I would encourage you to go to our website at www.cesj.org. Same links. Gene is using the same, all of our stuff, but there, if you go to the resources, and you'll see the many people who've come out with support of this and the articles, and there are free downloadable books. It won't cost anything for people to study and get the academics. What you want to get are the physical science academics. You want to get the architects. You want to get the engineers. You see, because they're going to be more open than the economists. Let the economists tell us why it's bad to democratize access to money.
So Norm, can you tell me how could minority-owned businesses actually benefit from what ESJ is doing?
Well, not for what we're doing, how they would benefit if the Economic Democracy Act was passed. DAS. Organized businesses would have the ability to get new capital, the most advanced capital, and be able to compete with the larger corporations. It'd be new things would be developed as the children begin to study in engineering and physics and so on, and look at and begin to understand the quality of the new technologies that are already developing. But they would come in with their own ideas that'll be better than whatever has been produced in the past. So
right.
They can,
and you know,
themselves.
I deal with people in the population every day in my profession with what I call real life problems, right? So it's problems like, and I'm speaking to the audience when I'm saying this, problems like, You don't have enough food on the table. You know, you work, and you might not necessarily qualify for food stamps because you make $2 too much. And so you're working, you're trying to pay your bills, you're trying to raise your children. And then the children, the ones that I have to see, are the ones that are falling by the wayside because your mother can't watch you and feed you too.
Right.
The father is out of the home. They don't have a village. And so what people, and I remember your daughter, Dawn, asked me this question, and I want people to understand long-term going forward that this organization is the best thing that has ever happened to our people and to any people, because going forward in the future, this is what's going to keep our young black men, our young brown men, our young white men, our young Native American men and women out of prison, out of trouble.
Exactly.
And then those who have big businesses that are concerned with minority growth, you have to understand that socially as well as economically, because the taxes that you have to pay for imprisonment, for TANF, for SNAP, for Medicaid. All of those taxes will be reduced because you're building a generation of owners now. You got people who are not suffering from poverty, so they're not robbing the elite. Because in this world, how it goes now with this current economic system, people talking about gun control, people talking about crime is out of control because it's a dog-eat-dog world out there. And those who are suffering are going to come after those who have. It's like a battle between the have and the have-nots. So how do we,
the thing is that our government, we have to stop depending on government to solve our problems. Let me finish, Norm. The government and all the leaders, as I said earlier, they are addressing the effects of poverty.
Right.
You have to go to the root cause of poverty.
Right.
What's the root cause of crime? Root cause of crime, you got carjacking, home invasions. Let me finish. Home invasion. People, you know, out there getting into drug activity. It is economics. It's economics. They're upset at the system. And it's based around economics. And when Queen mentioned about SNAP and all the welfare, I want this audience to know something. And you can go, you see, you can be super analytical and go study all this stuff that we're saying, but you're going to come back knowing that these are actual facts. 70% of the taxation power that goes into government, 70% of the tax revenue into government is for welfare subsidies. So if we can turn ordinary citizens, we're talking to the lowest of the lowest, to the richest, even the rich, they will get their equal share. But if we can reduce the amount of taxation through welfare subsidies, do you reduce the cost of government? Government was like, as I said earlier, they can then do what they were put in office to do, and we have to solve the problem. You cannot solve the problem of conflict and poverty and crime. You got to get people want to own something. As I'm out in the community and I talk to the young, you know, I see the young drug dealer, the prostitute. See, I'm proximate with the poor. I see it every day. And when I talk with them, they don't want to be out there doing what they're doing. They don't want to be out there drug activity and crime. You know, if you notice within the job market, you know, there's jobs out there. McDonald's is paying $14 and $15 an hour. You know, Amazon is paying $18 to $22 an hour. They're having problems filling those jobs. Why? Is it because it can be for two reasons.
Let me tell you something. You were talking about prisoners. We had a project. That was developed by an inmate. He had a 114-year sentence, and then he heard someone, and he got inspired and then came out. That was really interesting. Joe Coleman. And we developed with Joe, the New Birth Project, which is a justice-based model for transforming the prison system. It was a $3.5 billion project, which would be financed with the Federal Reserve behind it. And the interesting thing, the design is all there. All you have to go to our history of CSJ accomplishments. And let me tell you what happened. A mayor who was once involved, the mayor of Washington, who was once a member of the organization that Kelso and I put together with back in 68. Marion Barry, instead of, this was all designed, the pictures of the thing, and there'd be every prisoner, instead of producing license plates, would begin producing things for the global market, you see, and they'd get an income from that, one-fourth of which would go to victims of their crime, one-fourth to their family, one-fourth for their food and board, and then the rest of the one-quarter they would have when they were able to go out. And at the same time, there would have been this is in Southeast Washington, there would have been a corporation there so that they could then go and work in that corporation, which also would be employee-owned. So this was a $3.5 billion, and Barry, who was supposed to be for the people, he gave the contract to a private sector prison to replace the Lorton prison this is saying something. We don't want to exclude the people who are prisoners, right? But we want to obviously find, reduce the rate of people who are going into crime, but also at the same time treat them as human beings, and they are.
Let's just take a glimpse of our criminal justice system. This country, it's very different today than it was 40 years ago. In 1972, there were 300,000 people in jails and prison. Today, there are over 2.3 million. The United States now have the highest rate of incarceration rate in the world.
Right.
America also has 7 million people on probation and parole. What I say that to me, mass incarceration has fundamentally changed our world. In poor communities and communities of descendants of American slaves, there is a despair. There is a sense of hopelessness that has been shaped by these conditions. One out of three black men between the ages of 18 and 30 is either in jail, in prison, on probation,
or on probation and parole.
Yeah, in urban communities across this country, including Los Angeles, Philadelphia, Baltimore, St. Louis, Washington, 50 to 60% of black men are in jail, prison, or probation and parole. We've got to change that, and we've got a solution to change that. Now you have private prisons that are popping up. Government. And I think the last president, I think it was George Bush, said that they were no longer going to give money to private prisons. Because you know what they're doing in private prisons today? They're building Microsoft corporations in prisons. They've got prisoners making not just license plates, ladies and gentlemen, not license plates. They're making computer chips in prison. And getting paid, what, $5 a week. You know, they're building corporations. That is slavery. And that's what is stated in the Constitution, is the only way to get a man into servitude and slavery is through by corporations. But the thing is, with private prisons, they're in it to make a profit. So to make a profit, you have to have that jail filled up. It's like people being treated like commodities. The more pigs you have on the farm, the more profitability your business is. Not only that, their cousins are the ones that own the phone companies that the prisons make money on. Their nephews and brothers are the ones that provide the food to the prison. We got to end all that. And the way we have to do that, we have to start making demands and changing these policies, and that's what I love about DOS for ESJ. We've got enough programs within our communities. We have to change policies and systems, and that's another thing that I admire about the civil rights movement. They weren't based, go and do your research, they were not based on programs. They were in it to change policies and systems. We cannot, under any circumstances, continue to go and try to solve systemic problems with programmatic approaches. We have to go with systemic solutions to solve systemic problems, and that means we have to change the system.
Right.
Okay. So listen, gentlemen. Okay. So we're down to the last 15 minutes, and I don't want the audience to miss this because it's very important. I'm inviting all of you who will hear this broadcast that you can join on to CESJ by contacting us. We have 9 to 10 areas of interest that you can join on to. You can join on to something that you're passionate about. You have to be willing to work. This is a battle. This is something that we have to do, but we can get on board with other people. We can celebrate and support other people, but this is time for us to support ourselves. So, Gene, please, before we end the broadcast, please give us the 9 areas of counsel that people can join on to.
Yeah,
with Doc for ESJ.
Yeah, we're starting in St. Louis, and this can be replicated in all cities, but we have what we call the St. Louis Council of Community Boards. And you can go on our website at DOCS, that's D as in David, A as in Apple, S as in Sam, the number 4, E as in Edward, S as in Sam, J as in Jackie, .org. And we have what we call the St. Louis Council of Community Boards. And within that St. Louis Council of Community Boards, you have 9 advisory councils. You have the Council of Education. We have the Council of Arts and Culture. We have the Council of Agriculture. We have to get into urban farming. Most of our communities have become food deserts. We have to. We have the Advisory Council of Trade and Commerce and Economics, Trade and Commerce. We have the Advisory Council of Health and Human Services, and we hope to be putting together a program on a virtual where you can go on the computer and it'll ask them if you're having an illness and stuff like that. We have to start finding holistic approaches to solve some of our health issues. And we have there's 9 of them, but you can go on the that's just a list of some
and
of them.
And you have media and communication.
Yeah, we have Advisory Council of Communication, but we've got what the St. Louis Council of Community Board is pretty much designed to be is a citizens' governance. It's a citizens' governance that we have to start building relationships with our police chiefs and our police departments. We have to start building relationships with city government and going in and taking our, we have a youth and millennial board where we go in and build relationship with our city governance, education. I mean, you know, our academia, you know, it's not being taught. The educational system today is so antiquated. It's so outdated, you know. We have got to start to get curriculums implemented within, you know, educational academia, curriculums that will empower the students, not enslave the students.
Right.
So you can go on our website, dotsforesj.org, become a member, and tell us what some of your skills are. This is how you build sustainable communities. And with the Citizen Land Development Cooperative, you know, it's under a different component to the CLDC, but it's the Home Equity Corporation of course, some residential homes. And we're not talking about building communities, just slapping up anything. We're going to look at sustainability. We're going to build it from a green growth approach. We want the, you know, renewable energy and things like that. And I just take pride in Godfrey, descendants of American slaves, leading the way. I mean, our forefathers built this economic powerhouse to what it is today. Lehman Brothers, New York Life, the Rockefellers, the Rothschild, all had an interest in the slave trade when cotton was king. So our fathers had a big, it was all based on economics and the cotton trade. So if we help build this economic powerhouse to what it is today, our forefathers would turn over in their grave to allow it to go to the pits of hell today when they fought, bled, and died to build this country to what it is today. So we owe it to them and owe it to ourselves, our families, our children, and to God to get up, stand up, wake up, and clean up, and let's go to work. But also, when you go to that website, feel free to hit that donate button and donate a dollar, $10, anything, because after all, DOC-FESJ is the only organization that, along with CESJ, that's fighting for the enrichment of your family. Thank you. May God bless you.
Yes, and I want to add that what we are also losing, Gene, is the loss of control in our media. What
yes.
our children and what we have been exposed to is all I can say is sinful. And we have to be responsible for our children, what they see, what they read, what they can access. This media is destroying our youth. And we have to get back involved in the type of media that is accessible to our children. We have to have a say at the table of what is acceptable and what is not acceptable on public television, on cable television, on internet, where children can access this. There is a immoral type of behavior that's being expressed openly now on television. And our children are seeing that, and we are losing our children to so many things in media. I don't have time to go into it today, but we will talk about it in the future. So, Gene, we got 8 minutes. Do you want to go back down and give anybody a last opportunity to say anything, how to contact them or whatever? And we, Angelico is not on right now.
Yeah, Norm, you want to close out on anything? Before Norm goes.
Right. The thing I would say is we're talking not about capitalism, not about socialism or communism. This is a just third way. Neither what capitalism does is concentrate control, and so does socialism and communism. Power follows property, and you spread it out, and you'll have a true democracy for the world. And that is what we should be all worried about, is that we got to deal with poverty, racism, and war. We'll then have a world where people can begin to respect one another, because they're all going to have equal future opportunity through equal or through the democratization of money power for ownership.
All right. Myra Wilkerson, you want to close us out on anything?
Not in particular. I'm just thankful to be able to hear and share ideas and look forward to the things we can put together in the future together.
All righty. All right. Queen, That's it. But really, I encourage the audience, you know, to go to .freeESJ and CESJ website is a video library. I mean, it has a lot of information on there. When I've learned the CESJ, and as God is my witness, I was in the garage. I looked at the website, and I said, oh, this is it. Norman's in a just third way. And the way I describe a just third way is that most think you only have two sides to a coin. Well, there's actually three sides. There's a head and a tail, and there's an edge. So we have to go to the edge. Stop thinking outside the box. There's another alternative. You hear government talking about universal basic income. But whenever you hear about new legislation and new things and new development that's going on up in your neighborhood, there's three questions you have to ask. Who would pay for it? Who would control it? And who owns it? You know, those are the three questions we must begin to ask. And, you know, there's a lot of good brothers and sisters out there that, you know, that are buying land today and things like that. We have to find ways to turn it over to producing land. Black America, white America, we have to get into the producer of goods and services. You know, and most of our businesses are geared around consumer goods and services, things you eat, things you use. Well, how much fish and chicken can we eat? You know, we have to get into the producer of goods and services. That's the only 70% of the wealthiest income, 70% comes from producer of goods and services, machines, robots. That's where their income mostly comes from. They understand the power of capital. They understand the power of property. You know, when Jefferson said that the pursuit of happiness, no, before it was that, Locke said it, it was the pursuit of property. Property. Power follows property. We must understand that. And we're going to go into a lot of other things in the future broadcast, but these are things that we must begin to understand. You would never be liberated by a system until you understand the system.
Okay. Well, I would like to thank everyone who will listen. I would like to thank I thank our distinguished guests, Brother Gene Gordon, Brother Myron Wilkerson, Brother Enrico Space, and, of course, the phenomenal Dr. Norman Curlin. I appreciate each and every one of you. I pray that you will continue to follow this series. We will be on every Sunday from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m., We encourage you to join us. We want you to know that DOS is nationwide. We do intend to have chapters in other states. So if you are in another state outside of St. Louis, Missouri, even though that's our headquarters, please note that you are still welcome to join on with us and have the possibility of opening a chapter of DOS in your city and state. We need everyone on board. We need everyone who is suffering, who is poor, who is tired, who is disenfranchised. We need our Native American brothers and sisters to join on with us. So all of you, especially those of you who are in Utah, Oklahoma, Arizona, where you know where the reservations are, please, please reach out to our Native American brothers and sisters. Have them listen to us. We are here for them as well. We want them to be able to live life in abundance. This is their land. They are the original owners of this land, and we owe it to them to help them as we're trying to help ourselves as well. So we will be back here next Sunday. next Sunday. We're going to talk deeply about capital money and property, because those of you who own homes and own property and own land, we need you to become manufacturers and producers. That is what our communities need. So thank all of you for joining us. And we will be back here next Sunday. Thank you, Brother Gene, for all that you've done with DOS for ESJ. Original salute to you. And I look forward to the future. Thank you all. Good night.
Who they turn up be? Oh, love, honey. A woman will tell her.